Hey everybody, welcome to Hit Rewind. This episode we're going to get into the breakthrough of Jackie Chan in America. I know, some of you are like, that happened in 1980. Not really. That happened in 1985. Nope, not again. Not until 1996. I'm Michael and Tony's on the other side.
Hello.
So, before Rumble in the Bronx, did you know who Jackie Chan was?
Yes, because I would get knockoff Chinese translated to Vietnamese tapes in the local market on assorted various VHSs. So.
Okay. So you got to see some of the stuff that we didn't get to see for like years before it was ever released here.
Yeah, so I mean, like things like Drunken Master and some of his earlier stuff, like I got to see it, so like I knew who he was, so like it wasn't as huge of an impact for me when he finally broke through to the U.S.
Yeah, so of course I lived in Indiana and we really didn't have that kind of thing, but we had one of those low rent stations with no budget whatsoever, and so they would only be able to afford either, if the movie was like a studio film, like a real studio film, it was older. You know, it had run its course on all the other channels, or it was independent foreign stuff. And so they played, what was the original name of it? I think it was something Brawl. It's called Rumble in the, what is it called now? You know, the 1980, the one that they tried to make him a star. It was from Robert Klaus. It's the one that's like
said.
What's that?
I can't think of the original name for the life of me. Like, that was one of the problems with a lot of Jackie Chan films early on, was like, you know, it was like, it was brought to the U.S. in the 90s, but it was made in the 80s and had a different name entirely.
It was called The Big Brawl, and you had to be real careful saving that. Not Big Bra, Big Brawl. And that was, Golden Harvest, like, had a deal, I think it was with Warner Brothers, I mean, it was Universal, so they did that, and of course he's in the two Cannonball Run movies, which are like religion in Indiana, those and the fucking Monkey movies with Clint Eastwood. The Protector is one that kind of went under the radar. I can't remember if I saw it because of Rumble in the Bronx, or it was right before that, because Joe Bob Briggs had it on his show. And so that was kind of a warm-up, and I remember there was a kid in college who used to get import movies, and he was telling me about Rumble in the Bronx, and he's the same one who introduced me to John Woo movies a couple years earlier, because I was asking, I was like, what is this movie he's watching in True Romance? He's like, oh man, you haven't heard of A Better Tomorrow? You know, that kind of, everybody needs that one friend that has like the, oh, you want to go to that record shop in the dangerous part of town to get really cool stuff? Okay. The weird movies, yes. But I remember, like, the big push was they had Ben Stein narrating the commercial. Do you remember this? When he was going, look at Jackie Chan jump over the fence like so. Look at him bounce off this. No strings, no stuntman, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen that.
It was the first trailer that I have ever downloaded on QuickTime, and I think it took 15 minutes to watch a 3-minute trailer. And of course, what was that megapixel, you know, it was like such a tiny little itty bitty screen, and it was in such green, but I was like, we got to watch a trailer.
Oh my goodness.
And I remember we were camping, and we're like, okay, I can't take this cold anymore. That's a different story, why we would camp in the cold. We couldn't afford spring break, kids, so we made up our own idiot camping thing. So we were like, let's go to a movie. We're like, we gotta go see Rumble in the Bronx. And we get there, and it says on the window, to anybody watching Rumble in the Bronx, know that it's dubbed. It was shot, you know, in a different language or whatever. And one of the kids with us was like, I'm not watching a dubbed movie. We all looked at him like, you asshole. It's a kung fu flick. It doesn't even matter. I was like, okay, that convinced me. So yeah, I just remember having one hell of a time. And that open up this world, not just for Jackie Chan, but it's like, okay, I think it's time for us to move beyond Van Damme and Seagal and all those other, the white guys. At best, we get like, ooh, he's French, that's exotic. No, we want to go like to the source. For the first time since Bruce Lee, it was so exciting because you're just like, who is this guy? Who is this? Who is Jet Li? You know, who is Donnie Yen?
Yeah, I mean, it really opened up a lot of opportunities for, like, even, like, you know, B flicks coming out, like, best of the best, you know? I mean, like, there wasn't a whole lot of, like, Asian main characters that were able to do just, you know, martial art films. Like, it was always like a white guy doing it.
Yeah, the closest I think we ever got was Mark Dacascos, because he got a couple studio releases. But you notice how they had that thing where, like, well, let's play up the Hawaiian, the mixed race aspect. Let's not play into the Asian too much. Until Rumble in the Bronx broke out, and they're like, okay, let's go make our own version of this with Drive, which is amazing. But yeah, it just kind of like middle America was finally aware of this whole different world of cinema. And I remember it's like, we're going to talk about the New Line Cinema releases, except for one. We thought we had access to it. Who Am I is the one. And now all of a sudden it just disappeared. It was,
Oh,
you
I
saw
just do
it.
it, but, you know, I have my ways.
Okay. I didn't get to see it. All I remember is like it just had some of the best stunts. I don't remember the plot at all. But you could be guaranteed, bare minimum, there was a new Jackie Chan film in theaters every 6 months, and it was either New Line Cinema or it was Dimension. And yeah, eventually some of that stuff would go video, but still it was like high level video debut.
And like it was always for a lack of better terms, like there was always like one that was like extra slapsticky and one that was like a little more story driven, and so.
Yeah, I remember being disappointed in Super Cop because it was much more gun oriented and more serious. And he had two different worlds. I feel like the more dance, like, you know, he's the Grace Kelly of martial arts. Am I saying the right name? Grace Kelly?
Chris
Yeah.
Jones, yeah.
That those were more accessible. Those always seemed to make a little bit more money.
And I think the problem with Super Cop is like it's the second film of a three-part trilogy, and so if you didn't watch the first film and you got dumped into the second film and you're just like, I don't really understand, like, you know, the whole core of this is because like you're literally dropped into the middle of a series.
Yeah, they would do that. Like, you remember when it was, I think it was Operation Condor was.
Oh yeah, same thing, yeah.
They
So
flipped
that's
it,
like
right? Yeah.
the Armor of the God, Operation Condor, and the Zodiac was the last one that came out for that series.
Yeah, and then I remember, like, they couldn't call it Drunken Master 2. They had to call it The Legend of Drunken Master, to make it its own thing. That was, like, the last of those theatrical imports. And then that's when. By that point, he has Rush Hour and Shanghai Noon, and they kind of moved on from those. But it's so interesting because after a while, though, his movies kind of changed back to the way they were before, and then they were back to imports, and these smaller independent companies like Magnolia and Well USA and stuff like that were doing like VOD releases where they were in some theaters, but mostly it was about, hey, you can get this at home now. But so with Rumble in the Bronx, I think it is one of the best mixtures of what he does. Like, it's a good, like a mix, like a what do you call it? A buffet of all the best stuff that he does.
I agree. Like it's a good level of like the humor and the, you know, just the craziness of the scenes, but also like it's not too far gone from like a solid story element to where you're not like wondering how did we get here in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, it's also a really kind of a lower, almost a retro story from like the early 80s. It feels like something that Cannon would do, like, oh, the local punks, the motorcycle gang. It's something really simple for people to get. And I just remember like being wowed by the speed and design of the action sequences. Now, does he set up his action sequences, or Stanley Tong responsible for this one and a few others?
I think it depends on show to show, because like I know there's a couple where he like, you know, he's like beginning, middle, and end of all of it, and then there's some where like, you know, he comes in and he's directed around for it. So like I can't remember if Rumble in the Bronx was all him or not. I don't think so, though. I think that was a team effort.
Okay. Yeah, because it's kind of interesting that Stanley Tong has kind of, I think he still makes movies, but he's not really talked about anymore. I remember when he made Mr. Magoo, and it's like, oh, his big American debut, and people are like, oh shit, this is terrible. And then just kind of went, okay, I'm gonna go back. Oh, of course he did. I'm looking right now, he did China Strike Force right after Mr. Magoo, and I fucking love that movie. Never mind, I don't know what I'm talking about. Did you notice the mountains in the background when they're trying to talk about New York? You're like, that's Vancouver, what are you doing?
It's always great in those those like 90s, 80s films where you're just like, yeah, we're here. I'm like, you're definitely not in the place you say you are.
I will take that over green screen worlds.
Yeah.
The now it's everything is it's shot in Atlanta, and now it's supposed to look like New York and everywhere else in Chicago. I kind of like the whole Vancouver thing because there's a different look to it, and different cast. Was it Francois Yip? Isn't she Canadian? And I feel like she was in a bunch of stuff around that time.
I think so. I can't recall off the top of my head. It wasn't something I was digging into.
Looking, Black Mask. Future Sport, Romeo Must Die, The Pledge. Okay, the rest of these I don't know. Blade Trinity. That terrible movie. There's not really a lot to say about Rumble in the Bronx because it isn't plot heavy. It's character heavy. And I love watching all of them bounce off each other.
I agree. And also, like, you know, just for non-stunt double scenes, like some of those crazy, like, you know, like when they're pushing around the, what's called, the pinball machine and just like, the huge, you know, just stunts being done in this were just something that we really weren't seeing until now.
Yeah, I think the closest I had seen where it was designed this is Rapid Fire. There's a couple sequences in that that really have a Hong Kong feel to it.
Yeah.
And so Anita Mui, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, and Bill Tung, they would work with Jackie a lot during this time period.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it was mainly because it was overseas, because I think the Jackie Chan crew was primarily just Chinese flicks.
Yeah, I think it's just because they wanted to save money and make it more accessible to Americans by having it set in America, but, you know,
yeah.
Vancouver's just cheaper. I do love the camaraderie that certain groups of filmmakers have where they bring back the people. Like they're playing different characters, but they still have that same energy that you love. That's why Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor worked so many times together.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, you could say that Cheech and Chong, they're not playing different characters. They're the same fucking thing every time.
No, they're themselves. I mean, there's a reason why Jackie Chan is called Jackie in 90% of his films, you know?
Yeah.
Jackie Chan, like Sammo Hung. He's like, you see him together, you know, they're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for Tony Danza. Why not for Jackie as well? So the second film is the one where they're kind of like, okay, Super Cop did well, Rumble in the Bronx did well. Was Mr. Nice Guy next, or was that... No, First Strike was next, right?
I believe so. I think Mr. Nice Guy was a little further down.
Yeah, First Strike has one of the most amazing sequences with a ladder. I cannot believe that they were able to pull off. I don't know how many takes they took. Sorry, I paused because I thought you were going to say something.
I was just laughing because it's like, yeah, any time that you give Jackie Chan a good prop, it's like, how do you train for that? Is that something that you just have in the back of your pocket, or is something you just like, I wonder if I can?
Yeah, I wonder if his movies are like, okay, so let's find action sequences we've never done before, put them together. Like, they might have a huge list they've been building for years of... This could be a really cool thing. Let's find a way in the next movie as we're writing the script to fit this in. And like the way they do with Mission Impossible. Like, you know, they have action sequences in the back of their mind when they're writing a script.
I mean, there are moments where I just wonder if, like, they just look for the cheapest prop available. It's like in Mr. Nice Guy, it's like, we gotta work in a giant truck. Why? Because it's here. Like,
yeah.
It's here. We gotta work it in.
Well, and there became a thing that I love at the end of each of his movies that shows... you know, the stunts that have gone wrong. Sometimes they're just, like, simple, like, goofies, but sometimes you see serious injuries, and you're like, holy fucking crap.
Yeah, where, like, the entire team, like, runs up and, like, wheels them out on a, you know, on a stretcher. I mean, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, he broke his foot during that hydro... What do you call that thing? A hydrofoil? The big inflatable...
It's just a hover device. It's a hover tool. They call it a hover thing. Something.
Hovercraft. That's it. Sorry.
He broke his leg on that and ran the entire rest of the movie with the, you know, cast and a fake sock.
Yeah, that's just amazing. And you got to see more than any other action star at that time that he was putting in the work. There's no stuntman. There's no fake. You know, like sometimes you remember when Arnold would have that fake mask put on a stuntman, but it was so obvious. You know, stuff like that, or cutaways. And Jackie Chan, just his commitment to it, making you believe that he is doing it, is just astounding.
It's terrifying, honestly. honestly. I mean, I saw a video of him recently with his daughter watching his old studs, and you're just like, are you insane?
Yeah, well, he didn't hit a hole in his head from jumping to a tree or something like that and hit it wrong?
Yeah, I think like it was like a bad jump and a fall ended up like knocking a part of his skull off. Like, he's had some really bad hits.
Yeah. So First Strike is trying to move more into the spy kind of espionage territory, which he would do quite a bit. It seems like there's like a 50-50 shot in this era where it was going to be somehow spy oriented, even all the way to his American productions, like The Tuxedo, I think, was like this.
Yeah, The Tuxedo, Who Am I, like, he was a spy quite a bit.
Yeah. And this one, yeah, I really like the color palette, the speed of it. I actually like this one in Mr. Nice Guy a little bit more than Rumble in the Bronx, but I understand why Rumble in the Bronx hit the way it did.
Yeah. I wish you had a chance to watch Who Am I again, because I actually really enjoyed Who Am I, because, like, it was a good mix of humor, but also, like, you know, a plot that you could really grip into and follow along with.
Yeah.
Where, like, with Mr. Nice Guy, it was so out of pocket, you know, like the colors and the feel was a lot of fun. It's a good feel good fun movie, but if you're watching it for the plot, you're not relieving yourself.
Oh, no. You know, I think if I remember correctly, Mr. Nice Guy was sold with that song by Third Eye Blind. You know that first one? I want something else. You're like, oh, it's such a fun song. And then you listen to it later, you're like, is this about heroin? Doesn't work with Mr. Nice Guy. There's a sequence in First Strike, besides the ladder, that's astounding, is that he's underwater for huge chunks of time, and there's this whole almost slapsticky screwball comedy setup with the oxygen. Like, so he has a shark down there, he's fighting underwater, but at the same time, he has no oxygen, so he's constantly stealing it or borrowing it from other people. That is very, like, difficult to choreograph, and I'm always impressed.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's always insane, because, like, one of the big reasons why I keep watching Jackie Chan films is because, like, it's never, like, the same repeated stunt that he's, like, mastered. Like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, fall from this, and I'm gonna jump on this, and I'm gonna be underwater for this. So, like, how do you keep coming up with new stunts you've never tried that frightens the crap out of me?
Yeah, I think that's what bothers me a lot about. And I think maybe this is why everything changed once Jackie Chan came out, is a lot of the martial arts movies we had seen before this were almost always using two templates. Oh, you killed a so-and-so of my family, now you must get revenge or whatever. It's always like in a warehouse, a cheap fucking warehouse. Or two, it's in a ring. You know, it's a Bloodsport knockoff, which was an Enter the Dragon knockoff. So... he was taking, I think a lot of it is because Bond was so popular around this time where there was no Bond and we needed to fill that void.
I think it was a mixture of like both, you know, like just Jackie Chan wanting to get out of just doing period piece martial art films and also, you know, trying to break into the American market. He needed to do more Americanized things. And so I think just it was kind of an action default. Although I still can't figure out why his hair was colored the way it was. That still bothers me to this day.
Mr. Nice Guy is the last one from New Line Cinema that was in theaters, because I do believe that Who Am I was sold to HBO. I feel like I saw it there first. But this is the one where they're like, this is one, you know, big shot. You know, just try to, you know, hold on until we get Rush Hour in theaters, whatever. I think it was kind of like building up that audience. Do you feel like that? Still there?
Sorry. Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. It was getting kind of waffly there for a minute. But yeah, I agree. I think that it was really kind of all building up towards that, you know, Hollywood, big film, big budget movie.
Yeah, and thank goodness it worked out, because what if that had just fallen flat on their face, like, oh, shit, now, because I feel like they were exhausting the back catalog of, okay, so this isn't too old, this still has a decent budget, because you know how Hong Kong movies of the 80s look a lot different than the ones of the 90s. I feel like there was either new film stock coming in or more budget put into it. They look and feel different.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, like, look at the difference between The Killer, which was 1989, and then Hard Boiled, which is 1992, and they have light years difference in film quality.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it was just like, yeah, I mean, technology or just what, but something changed that just turned things around.
Yeah. I like this one too because this is like Rumble in the Bronx. They're trying to use Australia as, a setting, and they bring Australian actors into it. I mean, Richard Norton, if you know martial arts movies in the 90s, Richard Norton's kind of legendary. Not great, but legendary. what's funny is for some reason I can't think of any major action sequences for some reason. It's like a lot. Do you remember any set pieces that really worked in this film?
For Mr. Nice Guy, I mean, like they got a little insane with like the bad guy's house. Like that was like a really like important feature that basically got destroyed, and it looked funky to begin with. And like, that was because it was a paper house, so it was made to be destroyed. So,
Okay. I do like the stilt sequence. I thought that was really clever.
yeah,
So I guess
but
this was originally
like.
set up to be a part of Police Story, or is that the main series that Super Cop came from?
Oh, sorry, I was talking about Mr. Nice Guy, but yeah, for Strike, I believe this was part of the Police Story series, which Super Cop was part of the Police Story series as well, yeah.
Okay. It's weird when a series is broken up like that, because I wonder, because you and I think, like 10 years ago, did No Retreat, No Surrender, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's another
Yeah,
series where it's completely cut up and called different names in different places. Yeah. Of his movies prior to this era, what would you say is your favorite of the bunch?
prior to this era, oh my goodness, that's hard to say because, like, if you're asking, like, up to current, I could tell you, but like, prior to like the 90s, I mean, I'd have to give it to Drunken Master. It was one of my first times seeing Jackie Chan and seeing him like, sorry, Drunken Master 2, seeing him like really like, develop a character and have his type of humor into it.
Is Miracles during this era or prior? Because I really love Miracles.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh, like Gorgeous. Oh, Gorgeous was never released into the US, but I loved Gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to find some of his movies because while they were released by Dimension or New Line Cinema, that it was like a temporary thing, and now they're off to someone else, and some of these movies are like just in limbo right now.
Yeah, it's super unfortunate, and like it's always like even harder to like talk to Jackie Chan fans because like we all see different things because we all have different accessibility to different movies because they're just
Yeah.
not consistent in any way.
I thought I'd have more to say about breaking these down. I apologize. But for the most part, I just love the fact that he brought humor and fun to 90% of what we were, what was distributed to the mainstream audiences, America, Super Cop probably being the only exception. And that it could be something different than what you saw with Van Damme and Seagal and all the other guys, just square jawed, sweating, monosyllabic. He's very fun. He's chatty, and his movies had a dance musical quality to them.
I also like the fact that he brought some, like, yes, a lot of it's unrealistic, but, like, there's also a layer of realism to it where, like, just simple things, like, I don't know, punching a pan on accident and, like, flicking your hand, going, ah, or,
Yeah.
like, getting into, like, a kick fight with something and, like, both of you, like, hurting your shins, and it's, like, both the good guy and the bad guy are like, oh my God, that hurt, It's like people get hurt on things and unintentional things happen. Not all combat is perfection.
Yeah, well, like the thing where he would rub his nose a lot, I always loved that. Like, ooh.
It's like, oh, my face, ah.
Yeah, I deeply appreciate the fact that we got to have that change of pace. It also kind of upped the game in choreography. What I miss though is that he found a way, and whoever he was collaborating with as a director, to set the camera back so that you can see what's happening. That's what he also learned from early, the dance stuff and the sword, like the old Errol Flynn movies. Sit back and enjoy. You don't need 10,000 cuts. And do you think it kind of went wrong when they had people who weren't action guys being brought in and kind of masking the fact that they weren't that skilled, like Bulletproof Monk?
Like that was one of the constant back and forth. So, like, you're trying to take, you know, so, like, in this instance, we're talking about, like, Chinese cinema to American cinema, and then, like, they're trying to, like, you make it flow like an American movie would flow, and, like, you can't. Like, there are certain things and certain reasons why it's done the way it's done. It's the same problem we have with comic book movies, where, like, they try to cinematic it to where it's like making a movie make sense, and like it's based on comic book, you don't have to show every single scene, you don't have to show every single transition, sometimes you just cut to the next thing. And I think that was kind of what happened here, where, you know, we're getting people that, you know, didn't know anything about fighting, didn't know anything about combat, and were more, you know, excited to use tricks like speeding up the camera or things like that versus just allowing people to actually be fast in what they're doing and actually like choreograph it in a way to where it looks nice rather than it looks odd.
Yeah, I really think that only people that were able to do it right, and yes, there are some camera tricks in The Matrix, but for the most part, they did like 6 months of training and they had wire work stuff ahead of time, and then Kill Bill is, you know, they did a lot of work for that. But I feel like a lot of productions are like, well, we don't have that kind of time. We're not going to do that. So we're going to just speed this up with some cheap wire stunts or whatever, and then just, you know, stand-ins. Or shaky cam.
Oh, my goodness. Hate shaky cam.
The Bourne, look, it makes sense in Saving Private Ryan because it's chaos. They were on the beach, and it's a complete fucking nightmare. But when Bourne Identity came in and all of a sudden decided, oh, was it the first one? I think it was the second one where they decided to do the shaky cam.
All of a sudden, the second one. I couldn't watch it because I got so motion sick from it.
Yeah, and that's the way it is now constantly. It's just like, oh, we need the camera in everybody's face, and we need to pan in and out, shake, 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 to make it ultra-realistic. Look, I'm at a movie, guys. I'm fine if it's a little, you know, super reality.
No, I'm with you on that one. There's only so much you can do to have your own sense of style, and, like, you don't need to do it all the time. I mean, look at the, you know, Michael Bay, you know, sun glare or the, you know, spin around camera action. I'm like, I don't need every scene to have, like, you know, the actors in the middle and the camera spin around to show you the full view. It's like, it's not necessary. It's, you know, like, choose better tools.
Yeah. I'll say this. I'm glad he discovered the drone. But at the same time, did you need ambulance to be 90% drone shots? Holy
oh
shit.
God, ambulance. Oh, that's the whole thing.
Oh, my God. But yeah, and of course, after this is when he really broke through, because we had the Shanghai Noon trilogy. Well, no, it never got to be a trilogy, did it? I really wanted it to be.
No, there should have been, but they never got around to it. There are still talks about another Rush Hour, which I don't know if that's necessary, but I'll probably still watch it.
Yeah, and then we had, the Medallion and the Tuxedo, but I think somewhere along the way, they kind of lost what made Jackie Chan so magical. And I think that's why he felt it was necessary to go back to Hong Kong and have control over his films.
True. But, I mean, he's done some recent stuff that have been incredible. I mean, The Foreigner, you know, which doesn't even feel like a Jackie Chan film. It just feels like a good film.
What was it?
It was a great, you know, chance for him to just be an actor for once and not just be himself.
Yeah, I fucking love him as Splinter in the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Holy
oh,
shit,
yes.
So good.
100%. And as Monkey in Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah. it was really fun, though, revisiting these. And that kind of makes me want to go back in, like, okay, well, after him was Jet Li, and then there was Donnie Yen. Who, am I missing anybody? Shit, why can't I think of it? She just won a fucking Oscar, right? For Everything Everywhere All at Once.
She was also in Super Cop as well.
What is wrong with us? Oh, yeah. So I mean, there was a whole world that she was doing films, you know, like with Cynthia Rothrock and stuff like that. There's a whole world of these guys I want to go back and rediscover. And I feel like, kind of like the sexual thrillers of the early 90s. Come on, pretend like you don't know who Shan Tweed is, and I know you're a liar. they're kind of dismissed and thrown away. There's so many of them just lost on VHS. They never went beyond it because they didn't see any value for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a bonkers trip to see it kind of all spring forward. Like, you would think that it would spring forward from Bruce Lee or from, you know, Brandon Lee or The Crow or Into the Dragon, but, like, really, like, Rumble in the Bronx was kind of, like, what got all these Asian actors to kind of be like, you know, like, hey, we can make it in the U.S., and, like, producers and directors, like, yeah, we can have Asian star films that, you know, won't, you know, basically just be niche, you know, movies out there. And so Like, it's crazy to see how much it exploded afterwards once, you know, we had one person really kind of come around and be like, hey, like, people will watch these films.
Yeah, it seems like as one person is fading in a popularity, someone else will come along. I remember when Tony Jaa came along and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is that next wave, you know. There's always someone changing the parameter. Who the Iko? The one that was in the Raid, Iko Uwais. It always feels like every 5 to 10 years, there's somebody new to kind of bring life back into that.
Yeah, and I wish that people would just let them be them and not be like, oh, the new Bruce Lee. Like, that was a little Tony Jaa thing. It was like, oh, he's the new Bruce Lee. I'm like, can you just be the first Tony Jaa? Like, you know, he doesn't have to be the new Bruce Lee or the next Jackie Chan. Like, it's not necessary.
Yeah, I feel like they were trying to do that with, like, a lot of these guys were like, oh, he's the new Chuck Norris. And I was like, guys, there's only one Chuck Norris. Stop it. and I'm sorry, but Chuck Norris is a terrible actor. He's got to be the worst of the bunch. I honestly believe at a point that he was worse than Steven Seagal. Now, Steven Seagal, at this current moment, can't even show up in his own movies.
Honestly, like, I think Chuck Norris was just kind of like, he has just like that one character type. I mean, like, he could have been, you know, like the new, you know, for lack of better terms, like David Carradine, just like that stone face, like, you know, martial artist. So, like, that's it. Like, that's your,
yeah,
that's your jam.
He's the one that would be accepted at the Southern Drive-Ins. That's what his... Hey, y'all, we're gonna go see Breaker Breaker! Alright, I think we wandered off the ranch too far. Alright, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Tony. And it's off to the next episode.
Bye!
Bye!